Hello, and welcome to this Black History Month program honoring some of our citizens from the Northern Neck. I'm your host, Pixie E. Curry. I hope you have listened to my audio series, A Pixie from Kilmonic. I have the pleasure of having five interviewees to participate in this program, and today's guest is Captain Carol Curry. I just also want to thank the Northern Neck Baptist Association moderator, Reverend Gennard E. Reed, corresponding secretary, Ms. Joy Carpru, and all the members' churches from Lancaster, Northumberland, Westmoreland, and Richmond counties, with special thank yous to Willie Chapel Baptist Church and Beulah Baptist Church. And I particularly want to thank Calvary Baptist Church, Reverend Samuel Kane, and the board members for the use of the facilities for all 5 days of this program. So now, Uncle Carol, are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, there you go. I want to thank you, Uncle Carol, for participating. And I know we got off to a rough start, but you're here, and I'm thankful for that. I have a question I want to ask you. Someone made a statement that they would be hard-pressed to find a licensed Black waterman. They said that the Black crabbers and the oysters and the gill netters had disappeared in Lancaster County. And they also said that they capped the number of licenses that can be issued. So if you don't have one, you can't get one unless someone is willing to sell theirs for big bucks. And they also said that white watermen passed their licenses down within the families, and that most Blacks were allowing theirs to expire if the family didn't go into the business. And for now, that they couldn't name a Black person in Lancaster County who makes a living on the water. Is that true?
Well, I thought, you know, as I got off the boat, I got out with it, and but I really couldn't, you know, couldn't say for sure. But I mean, it's not too many. I mean, I do know that, but it's it was a card that you know that they would issue you for grabbing and gill netting and stuff, and I mean, if you didn't have that card, well, then you couldn't do it. But what you were saying, you know, is true, that you could always, you know, pass that card to somebody else in the family, you know, once you retire, you know, or if anything happened, you know, that you couldn't work no more.
I know that there's a few Black captains that is presently, like, they're not here on the Northern Neck, that they have to go to Louisiana. That is still true, that there's very few Black men, we won't even say Black females, because that's just seemed to be non-existence, having Black women that are working in the Manhattan industry as captains of boats. What do you think is probably the cause of that? Is it because the work is so hard? Is it because the opportunities are limited so that they can move up in the profession? What do you think are some of the causes?
I can't really put my hand on it, but I mean, as far as Black captain down in the Gulf, it's not but one. That Carlton Hockham is the only one I know of that's left down there that's fishing a boat in
Matthew Gaskins.
No, but Matthew's not. He's not fishing no boat. He works on a caraway boat. They'll go alongside and pump another boat fish and take them in.
So there's the main boat, there's the, what you call them, the caraway?
Yeah.
What other boats will be associated with doing a set other than those two boats?
Well, that'd be but all. I mean, in other words, most, well, I think it's set up down there. I really don't know that much about it, but I think I know enough to know that they got enough, you know, they got enough caraway boats down there for, I think, to almost cover each boat. And, you know, fishing heavy, but then them boat don't have to come in. They can put theirs on the caraway boat and keep it on fishing. And they doing it, you know, they start doing the same thing up here on Chesapeake Bay.
Where's some of the waters that you used to work on, other than the bay? You were going to New Jersey. Where else did you go?
Oh, yeah. We fished in New Jersey and you know, in Maryland waters. Of course, you had to be, Maryland, you had to be 3 miles off. And of course, I mean, all the states now, that's what they're going to. They push them off to 3 miles in North Carolina. And that's what, you know, that really, that's when you go down there. I mean, I made a trip down there, and it was 26 hours and 20 minutes back to Reedsville. A long way.
Yes. How many hands would you have to have on a boat for a trip that long?
Oh, well, you you got your crew. I mean, it's it's normally, you know, 15 with the captain, and I think it might be a little bit more than that now.
I want to ask, what person in history would you want to have met, and what would you ask them?
Well, I think I would, you know, I would have wanted to meet President Obama. I would ask him, you know, what was really going on inside of him when he was doing the whole campaign. You know, how did he feel? And I mean, I know you have to know if you want something, you go after it. But it's but you still got to have, you know, fire in that stomach for to do that.
Just like you said, you had that dream that you wanted to own a boat.
I tell you the truth. The first day that I went aboard a fish boat, and I told myself right then, I said, the only thing that I got on my mind now is to work up and try to be captain. That's what I did. I went through some problems, you know, but I stuck with it.
I have a question from the chat room. What advice do you have for young people today regarding careers and education?
Well, I would say that, you know, just cut a slice of the pie and don't try to pick the whole pie.
Sounds simple enough. So,
well, you know, in this day and time, this generation now is not like when we came up, and you know, you can't get rich overnight. You really can't. But this young generation, some of them do think that they can do it. And I don't know if the price ain't what they want, then they not gonna work.
Would you have any guidance regarding how you manage your money, especially in retirement?
Now, I tell you the truth. I mean, the whole time that I was working, and I was sort of, you know, in a helping stage. I had to help my family, my children, grandchildren. Now I don't think so.
What was the best advice you was given when you were preparing to enter adulthood?
Well, I think the best advice that was given to me was stay on course. Right? Whatever that you want in life, just stick with it. And 9 times out of 10, I mean, you know, it'll come to you. You will succeed.
What do you want to be remembered for?
I guess trying to help somebody else that, you know, that needs a helping hand. I mean, I believe in that. A little bit different in this day and time. Everybody don't believe in that.
Name some of the most significant events that happened within your lifetime as it pertains to your civil rights?
Well, I would say that President Obama, when he took the White House, and the 9/11 incident, for me, and I think that the Voting Rights Act,
How did the 9/11 event affect you as far as your civil rights?
When that took place, I thought about it, and I figured how close that we had came to something that really that nobody wanted, and we did. It was close.
What challenge would you give to the young black people?
Well, I would say, you know, set a goal and just don't give up on it.
Do you still listen to your CB and listen to the votes coming in?
Oh yeah. Well, that's in my blood. That ain't gonna come out until they put me in the ground. It's something that you know that you come up with and you. I did it for 47 years, and you don't get rid of it overnight. And I've seen some bad times, real bad times, and I've seen a lot of good times on the water.
Uncle Carl, I just want to let you know that I thank you for being here today, and that next time we do this, I'm going to be a little more prepared and on my game. And I just want to say thank you for being here and for helping me to push my dream forward. And I'm very proud that I'm your niece. You inspire me. You really do. So
you're welcome with what I gave you. I don't guess it was much, but it was something.
You showed up. And that's the first part of it all. Well, I just had some questions that I wanted to ask you that I didn't get a chance to ask.
All right.
Okay. First of all, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
How you think the environment is affecting the fishing industry?
Well, it's hard for me to say because, I mean, things that have changed around now with the companies, you know, cutting out half of the boats, and they using, well, the last year they end up using three for trailway, so that the boats would, you know, continue to fish. If they got a load, they wouldn't have to come in, but they would, you know, they put them fish, they'll fish on the trailway at first. But the way it ended up, price, they're catching twice as many fish now. They're doing it this way, and it's really economical for the company because, when I fished at one time, that you know, it was 10 boats there in and they, you know, they not using the boat five now. So and by the time you add the total per season for the boat, I mean, they catching just as many fish, but with half of the boat.
Despite the fact that we have very warm winters, erratic summers, and so on and so forth, that is not affecting the industry. The environment is not affecting the industry because just as many caps are being pulled in as if nothing is happening.
It's been pretty good for, a certain amount of season, up until now. But I mean, a fish is something that you just can't count on. I mean, it might be plentiful one year, and you go right back to next year, and it won't hardly be in it. I mean, I've seen it like that. I fished when the high boat didn't have a 12 million fish, and you have a season like that now. I mean, they'd be tied up because of it. It wouldn't be no way possible that the crew could make it on 12 million now.
Is that considered a small count, 12 million?
Indeed it is. Well, them boats, last year, they had better than 90 million, some of them did. So that tells you what they're doing now. with them caraways.
I thought the Mid-Atlantic fishery, they put a cap on how...
They did, but they're on the same budget that, when they first put that cap, where they had the full amount of boats out there that they had been fishing, but then the last year, they went to, I think it was last year, it could have been year before last, and they went to 5 boats, so that made the boat could catch that many more fish until they got through the cap.
Douglas Campbell said he was with you one time. Y'all was on top of the bridge.
Oh.
Douglas Campbell said he was with you, and you could tell just by looking at the water, where the fish was going to be. You pointed out, you knew, you could just look at the water, and you was on top of the bridge, he said, and you pointed it out to him. He said he never seen anything or heard anything like it before. How you was able to read the water?
Oh, I couldn't read. I couldn't read the water, but I went where my conscience told me to go. Where I thought that they would see. It might be something, and it turned out to be right many times. Yep.
You also told me in the interview about the time a Russian trawler came into our waterways and just sort of sucked the life out of everything. Said nothing was left. It took a long time for the bay to recover.
Yeah, but when they came over, yeah, they had to stay in international water. They had to be. They couldn't come, within 12 miles of the land. But they had them. They had factory ships, and I think they caught everything that everything came up in the net. They didn't throw back nothing. They processed everything. But it was a bunch of them here for a while there.
Do other international fishing vessels still come into our waters? Is there like a competition of sorts between?
I tell you the truth, I don't think so. I ain't heard a whole lot, but when them Russians were coming here, but they wasn't out on the country, because I think it was boats working from Romania too. Had factory ships. You don't hear them more about that. They I'm sure they're still working, but they working somewhere else.
It's a hard life living on the water. Things.
Yeah, it is. It certainly is, but of course it's much better now than it was years ago.
Oh, yes, no doubt.
Yeah.
From working from hand nets to automated equipment and using computers, and you say you was going on instinct or conscience, now is pilot planes that direct boats to go to the areas where the schools are, where the sets are. You was one of the pioneers, Uncle Carl. One of the pioneers.
No, I wasn't one of the pioneers, but I think about it. The reason why that we got a chance, because this later generation, like when I come along, and you take people like Captain George Jones, Charlie Winters, and Nathan White. They was in it for a good while. Cause George Jones, he was a good fisherman. wasn't no fighting about that. He fished up at Port Marlboro, and it wasn't too many people that going to beat him fishing. He caught them every year. They really was a pioneer.
Do you remember when the Fenwick Island took on water?
Yeah, I was right on the John Deere that night when she went down. Yeah. Time wasn't too good that night in the. In the night that the conferences. I'm trying to think. Well, that was a Nat Peak, one of them down. These both went down. I went down. It got real bad that night. That's the way it was then. I mean, you know, you go down, I mean, you go to North Carolina in the fall of the year, and you take from Cape Hatteras on, right on down. They want nothing but weather breeder. I mean, it just come from nowhere. And I mean, it gets so rough over you so quick, and wasn't nothing you could do but just try to make it in.
This first program is dedicated to the first ones and the dreamers who made it possible for us to achieve our own dreams. Thank you all for listening and for participating.